Hello and welcome to podcast number two of The Life of Riley, Autism and Us. This week we're going to be talking to Alison about her life and how autism affects her family. So Alison, do you want to give a little brief rundown of who you are and what autism is like in your house?
Yes, definitely can do. Right, so obviously, as you know, I'm Alison, and our story with autism is this. The mother of two sons, the youngest of which is Jay, who is now 20 years old. That really makes us feel old, but he's 20, and he has what used to be called, back in the day when he was diagnosed, with high functioning autism.
Yes. Like, now we're steering away from
them labels, of course.
So he's autistic.
He is autistic. That's the bottom line. He's autistic. Whether you, however you dress it up, high functioning, low functioning, it's autism.
Yeah. And what would you say, you know, when was Jay, how old was Jay when he was diagnosed?
So Jay was diagnosed quite early. He actually got his diagnosis when he was 3. Mm-hmm. Which is quite early, I know. And that started from us. His journey, our journey, kind of started really from him being about 1, I would say. So there was the indicators of autism. But, of course, at that time, I didn't know anything. Nobody knew anything, because you don't have to know unless you've had it in your family previously. You don't have to know. So that started with 1 or 2 kind of pointers that then led on to us getting medical intervention. And he had various opportunities and programs to go on. We had training courses, and it all culminated when he was 3 years old with his diagnosis of autism.
Right. And as Jay grew up, did he go to a mainstream school?
No, he didn't go to a mainstream school. We chose to go down the special needs route, but that was our choice as a family. What happened basically was, when Jay was of an age to go to nursery, he went a bit earlier at 2 years old to Woodlawn Assessment Nursery, which was absolutely wonderful. And that was kind of so teachers and health professionals could basically have a look, keep an eye on him and see how he was performing basically in relation to other kids. After that, like I say, we got his diagnosis of autism when he was 3. So the nursery route, at that point, I decided I wanted him to go to the mainstream option. I suppose at that point, like a lot of parents, I was kind of in denial, didn't want to tell anybody really that he had autism and didn't want to make him different from anyone else.
If you're really stupid about that now.
Yeah, really, really stupid, really stupid. But back then, we're talking 17 years ago, I guess I was starting my journey with it and the acceptance and everything of it.
Yeah.
So we went to where he was put into the local mainstream primary school for nursery, and that just didn't work out at all. It was suggested that we looked at special needs nurseries at the time, and I said no, because, you know, I want him to go to mainstream. I don't even know why I wanted him to go to mainstream, other than probably autism and any sort of special needs wasn't fitting in my plan.
It's not what I expected.
Didn't need to have this, you know. I had plans for him, so went to mainstream. That just didn't work out. And we went down the route of the special needs education. And that was absolutely the best thing for us and for Jay.
Yeah.
It really, really was. He's attended some wonderful schools, sixth forms, now college. And I absolutely 100% firmly believe that he wouldn't have reached his potential or become the young man that he is now without the input of those very great schools and teaching staff.
It makes such a difference, I think, the fact that the kids can be themselves in these schools. You know, like the teachers know the behaviours and some of the stims that they're going to do and things like that. And I think mainstream, sometimes the teachers and the assistants are a little bit nervous of that.
Well, I think so. And I think it's a lot of it's due to lack of training, to be honest, and lack of awareness about how bending the rules slightly, or not even bending the rules, just changing the rules, that can make a massive difference. Jay, at, say, 3-4 years old, well, 3 years old when he went to mainstream, telling him not to sit on the carpet or telling him to sit on a red carpet when he wanted to sit 6 inches away on the yellow carpet, was not happening, really. You know, it didn't fit in with his agenda, which is obviously typical of autism. And did it matter anyway?
No.
Of course it doesn't. And this is what we need to steer clear of now. And I think it is happening to some degree, but it needs to be worked on. Standing around at snack time.
Yeah.
And eating a snack for a child that has massive issues around food and eating, because that was the first indicator that Jay did have autism, was the fact that he basically wouldn't eat. And because he didn't eat, he then developed, well, an underdeveloped gagging reflex, which meant when he did eat, he choked. So expecting him to stand and chew on a bit of apple was actually really quite dangerous and not necessary as well. So it definitely wasn't the right setting for him. It was definitely right that he could go to a school where, whilst there was structure, because obviously there has to be, it also allowed for his individuality and stims, and took into account his sensory processing.
Yeah, it's really important. And I think that kind of leads what on. Last week I answered, what is Life of Riley Autism and Us? What is that to me? And to me, it was starting the blog. And I know when I started the blog, I didn't really know you then. We do live quite close to each other. At the same time, you had already been working on, if anyone who doesn't know Alison is a very good actress and writer.
Well, thank you. I'm not paying you for saying that.
And she's already had numerous plays out and about, Betox and Secrets about dementia, has been really well applauded. And Alison started working on a play about autism. And we joined together with the Third Wheel Kelly, who you'll meet at some point, to kind of pad it out and put other experiences in.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So if you want to tell them a little bit about that.
Yeah. So for me, you obviously had the blog and things, and that was really important. So for me as a writer, and mainly a playwright, I decided to write about autism. And that for me was a very, very cathartic process of ordering stuff and just getting how I felt out about it and how Jay felt about stuff, getting our story out there so other people who are dealing with the same situation would kind of have a starting block, maybe to talk, to see this play, and for it to promote discussion, because I think a lot of people don't talk. You know, in the beginning, like I say, for me, it was like, we won't tell anybody.
Yeah.
If you don't tell anybody, it's not happening. Well, you know, that was obviously a really, really dumb thing for me to do, but that's how I thought at the time.
Yeah, well, you didn't know what it was then.
Of course you didn't. Yeah, didn't know exactly, you know, what was going on. So to get this play and to promote discussion, because we didn't really have this discussion. It was something that wasn't in our family that we didn't really want to talk about. You know, it was kind of like, well, the C's autistic, but, you know, he can do this, he can do that. He does look at people. And that was kind of the naivety that we had. But why not? Because we didn't know anything about it. Also, like you see, mine and Jay's and our family's kind of experiences with autism, putting them into the play of The Life of Riley, then combining forces with yourself and Kelly, then your stories of autism with Riley and with Joe and other people's stories. I think we've got a really good mix and we've come together, which we have had really good response to our play, The Life of Riley. And it has helped because the reviews we've had have been really, really good. And the best reviews are, of course, those when the families say that's like looking into our living room.
Yeah.
That's give people insight into what we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
I wanted to make it a kind of real warts and all account, but also it was very important for Riley, who is the autistic person in the play, to have a voice. So it just lets us know what he's thinking, because some of the stuff we do as parents, with the best will in the world, we mean well, but it's really stupid.
Yeah.
Really, really stupid. I'm still guilty of doing that now. For example, I mean, we went to the dentist. We changed dentists about 3 years ago or something. 2-3 years ago. So I went to the dentist. So me and Jay have a family appointment. Nothing unusual about that. You know, he's 18, but, you know, people go together. And when it was his turn in the chair, I said to the dentist, you know, oh, well, this is Jay and he's autistic.
Yeah.
Was there any real need to say that? Because I don't actually think there was. And I knew as soon as I seen it because Jay's face.
Yeah.
Is like, was that mother. Necessary, mother, to look at me teeth to tell him I was autistic? And I was like, oh, no, yeah. I guess not, you know.
You're still thinking of him as being seven.
Exactly, exactly. So we've just got to kind of move on from that, you know. And it's not easy because I think your overall thing is any parent, if you've got a child who's autistic or not, is to want the best for them, want them to be happy and to protect them. But that's like tenfold, obviously, with a child with any disability. Yeah. And to me, that's just paving the way. And sometimes I've got to rein myself in a bit because, yeah, like Jay says, I can be a total embarrassment, really.
Well, I know in that comes across in the play, because obviously you play the mum in the play.
Yes.
We have some really talented actors in there, don't we?
We certainly do.
And some of the monologues really hit home and resonate with so many people. I mean, there's always people waiting to talk to after the play's finished. And I think giving Riley the voice in the play, the part where Jed, the dad, talks about he wants his son to go on holiday with the lads and get pissed and things like that, you know. And you've got Riley standing behind him saying, come on, Jed. Like, is that really the best you want from us?
Yes.
You know, and it kind of makes you think, like, we need to
up our game a bit, I think.
We need to kind of trusting my kids a bit more, I think
we're
capable of so much.
Yeah, but it's a common thing, really, isn't it? And we've had this conversation, I know, a million times, and we've said this to parents who come along to our courses or get in touch with work. What we want for our kids, because as non-autistics, you know, we are kind of like, we're social beings to some degree, and we need friends, we need that validation, we need to have these situations to feel popular and whatever. And that doesn't need to happen for our autistic children.
Yeah.
Jay's quite happy. He doesn't need that. So it's kind of known not to project our needs and wants as parents onto the autistic child and measure the successes along with that, because it doesn't happen. It's totally different, and it's unnecessary. Like, even now, like I see he's 20, and I guess, you know, obviously you move on to different stages of if life. And Jay's now an autistic young man, of course, and we've had everything from moving from the primary school to the high school, which was traumatic to say the least, and then on to college. So you've got that, and it's still, you still want to kind of take over and promote your needs.
Yeah.
But they are, like, our needs, my needs, they're not Jay's needs, and we just kind of need to rein yourself in, even down to at Christmas. I mean, obviously this Christmas was a lot different to other Christmas because we're all locked in. But conversation we had at Christmas, what would you like, you know, what would be really great at Christmas? I would really like on Christmas Day for Jay to wake up with a hangover because he'd been out with the lads on a Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
20 years old, you know, like his older brother. Oh God, I don't want this turkey dinner. But that's me.
Yeah.
Because at 20, that's what I would have been doing. That's not him. And, you know, why the hell do I want to project being ill onto him? I don't know. Is it some sort of sign of how popular you are because you've had X amount of Jaeger bombs? Yeah. I don't know. That's my needs, not his.
That's like neurotypicals are quite pathetic in that way, I think.
Exactly, yeah. And then you just look at it, it's like, he doesn't want to drink. That's his decision. He's 20. He doesn't want to drink. And if I say, oh, do you want a little glass of this or that? Or he's like, well, no, I don't like white. Well, why? Why are you trying to force it on us? You know, so, yeah.
But him being, you know, like you're saying there, Jay's a young man now. I worry about Riley's future. Riley's only 9. I'm terrified for when Riley's 20. So how have you found moving into being an adult with Jay? What's the support like? Do you get any?
The support is there. Personally, I found every milestone to be absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
And hugely traumatic. Probably for me as the mother more than for Jay or anybody. But because obviously along with autism, Jay suffers with anxiety, which is part and parcel of his autism. So when we have to do major changes, his anxiety heightens, and it's just awful to see him in that situation about something that people would progress through quite normally. Obviously, you're going to be anxious about new jobs, new colleges, new schools, whatever. But to that degree, it's really quite, that's debilitating. Yeah. It's not a very nice thing to see. But the support is out there. You've just got to go look for it. It's not always, doesn't always come knocking at your door.
Oh, it certainly doesn't.
No.
I speak to a lot of parents through the blog who are, they're desperate to find somewhere, you know, for these young men and women to socialise, to kind of, they need help with transport and things like that. Just because you're 18 doesn't mean that's the end of it. And
no.
Support should be continued, I think, in the way that it is when they're little.
Definitely.
And it's not.
Definitely. And I think just because our autistic kids become autistic adults, it doesn't mean they need any less support. It just changes. They still need kind of, if they're going to college, they still need that transport. Now, we're in that position right now where Jay's transport will end this year. Mm-hmm. He goes to college quite a few miles away from home. So that is something that we need to kind of organise. And we will be able to overcome that because fortunately, you know, we drive. But a lot of parents might have to take their young person out of college.
Yeah.
I do know someone who, because the transport ended, it's costing them £500 a month to take taxis.
And that's impossible for a lot of people.
It's kind of like a rent or a mortgage for some people, you know. So there's that, but I don't think the support should end. And obviously, as people will know now, if they've had a look on blogs and our websites and stuff like that, and the whole Law Productions and the Life of Riley Kick page, they'll know that the buddy scheme is something we're actively promoting, mm-hmm. because young adults need buddies to help them at college to basically navigate general life, I guess, as well as outings and stuff, and just someone maybe that they need to prompt them for dentists, doctors, just little things that we take for granted.
And social things, I mean.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, I don't know how many friends Jay's got. I don't know if he's got any. I know he's quite happy in his own company doing his own thing. He's hilarious. But kind of, you know, if he wanted to go to the cinema, does he want to go with you?
Not
or
really.
You're really uncool.
Well, yeah, obviously I'm just like a constant source of embarrassment. Unless, of course, it's something that benefits him.
Absolutely.
Then he will like admit that he's my child, you know.
Yeah.
But other than that, but no. Talking about social lives and things like that, we're in this lockdown now and everybody is like, oh my God, I'm absolutely sick of this. I just don't want to do this anymore. I'm missing my friends, missing my family. Lockdown, and I'm sure that G is not unusual, for an autistic young man is actually being a godsend.
Yeah, he's enjoying it.
He's loved it. His, apart from, I mean, he's sick now. He wants to obviously go to the cinema and he wants to go out and about and he wants to go to do
Disneyland.
Things he wants. Disneyland, Universal Studios, just in case anybody out there is listening, we love Universal Studios. Just saying. So, but the lockdown situation, his social life has actually increased dramatically,
mm-hmm.
because people are doing Zoom, because people are, you know, talking to each other on phones and stuff like that. And, you know, they're not actually meeting up. They're meeting online. And to him, that's a more comfortable place.
Yeah.
He was, you know, did a FaceTime with a friend. It was on 4 hours.
Yeah.
He wouldn't hold a conversation normally for 4 hours on a face-to-face because for a lot of young autistic people, Jay worries in the fact he's quite sociable. He will look at you. He wants to get to know people. He likes to talk about himself predominantly, which mm-hmm. he'll hate us for saying, but it's absolutely true. And he will be listening to this, and you know it's true, Jay. But he worries when he's having conversations with people. And it's not just about what will I say, what this, what that, what's, you know, it's meeting new people as well. It's kind of, am I sitting too close to them? Am I standing too close to them? Because he hasn't been born with that inbuilt thing that we have as neurotypicals, where we know we're invading someone's personal space.
Yeah.
So, we know when to stop speaking and let that person speak. We know when someone's actually bored, you know, because mm-hmm. they're yawning and they're walking away, where Jay would probably be running after them going, hey, I haven't finished, you know, come back. So the online sort of friendship has absolutely been fantastic for him.
Yeah.
And that has, you know, sent his confidence really, really soaring, that has. To the point where the buddy scheme, obviously, that as we know that we're running and expanding, he would absolutely love to see a young adult group.
Yeah.
Meeting online, even outside of lockdown. And I think that's kind of the way forward. Not everybody is wanting to kind of desperately get out there and hug people. And
yeah, I don't particularly like people. I like my own people.
Aye, but not everybody.
But I would be quite happy to have masks on all the time. You don't have to wear makeup. If you're a real minger, you don't need to brush your teeth.
True. This is true. Yeah.
And it just, you know, like, people are, sometimes they're horrible. Like,
they are.
Yeah. And so that way, for lockdown, for me, I'm not a hugger. You know, a lot of people would say to me and have said to me, Christine, do you think you are autistic? The answer to that is probably yes.
Without a doubt, I would say.
Yeah.
My opinion for what it's worth. Yeah.
But, you know, that it is what it is. And just, I'm just going to crack on regardless.
Well, exactly. There's not much you can do about it. Just crack on regardless. Yeah. No, a lot of people don't like people. Like I say, the social element. And, you know, me personally, I just can't wait to go to the pub. Basically, yeah. just to get out there, because that's what I need. And I'm not really a hugger. I don't really hug people, but I think I'm going to.
Ooh,
I, well, I might. No, I don't know.
No, you can get the brush.
Well, I'll get a brush. From I'll a pat distance. You on the back with a brush.
Yeah,
but I might cuddle people, whether they like it or not. Probably
just to show them that you can.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we haven't been able to for so long. I mean, it'll probably last all about a week or something, yeah. And then I'll like go nah.
Ooh.
But I might try.
Yeah. Well, why not? But I think the fallout from COVID, I think mental health wise, is going to be enormous. We know Kelly as a counsellor, how busy she is. And I think we have, if people don't already know, we already have a play out there called Really Riley, which is for primary schools, mainstream primary schools predominantly, and not just the kids, the teachers, anybody who needs to see it. It kind of teaches them a little bit about autistic kids and their traits, and like you said before, sitting on the carpet, the teacher, you can see light bulb moments going off of them, going, oh my god, how many times have I told that child to get out from underneath that desk, when really it makes no difference if they're sat under a desk or not. So I think it promotes a lot more understanding of these kids.
It really, really does.
In an enjoyable way.
In an enjoyable way, of course, because performance is a massively, massively powerful tool.
Yeah.
To get information over and in the whole learning process. So I think talking about our theatre and education programmes is probably really appropriate right now. Not just because of the autism topic, where we do have Really Riley, which goes into primary schools, which hopefully we're going to be able to do that digitally as well as actually in person in schools.
And for high schools, I think the story begs to be adapted.
It does, it does.
Well, it already has. Yeah, you already know what that's
secondary
going to be.
Version, yeah. And of course, other subjects like diversity, bullying, early gambling, and the perils of social media, because that's very important. So the theatre and education programme that Life of Riley or Law Productions runs, and you know, it's very important in addressing all of those subjects. And the thing about that is, as well, we, for anyone who doesn't know, in the theatre and education programme with Law Productions, and also in the parents, grandparents, sibling courses and employers courses that we run about autism, we use a technique called rewind theatre, which is extremely, extremely powerful. And that gives participants the chance to look at how things have been played out and give them the chance to actually stop and rewind and think about it and give them their input. And that's a really, really, really powerful tool for learning.
It is agreed. I know it works particularly well on the grandparents.
Yes, it does. Yes. Uh-huh.
In the play The Life of Riley, the Granny Mary is awful. She's not awful, but, you know, some of the things she says, she's very blunt. She doesn't understand what it is to be autistic. She's very judgmental of her daughter.
Very, yeah.
And when we use that with the Rewind Theatre, we'll see Mary come in tutting because there's dishes in the sink and the washing hasn't been done, and she's awful. But then, if you know, you look at that again, you rewind it back and she comes in and says, oh, I see you've had a rough night. I'll do your dishes for you and I've made you a pie. What difference does that make in that household?
Of course, it's a massive difference. And that's what people can see being played out in front of them. They can actually identify and relate to the characters and then have the opportunity in a very holistic environment and non-judgmental of changing that. So they go away then feeling more confident and equipped to deal with the situations.
Yeah.
Because talking about grandparents, grandparents are a very, very, very massive part of certainly of our family's support system.
I couldn't function without my mum and dad.
We couldn't. Yeah, we absolutely couldn't. We couldn't function with without the grandparents and certainly get in the position that we are now. And that's a really important. But of course, it's a learning curve for grandparents as well.
Of course.
When Jay was diagnosed, for example, his grandparents didn't know anything about it. They're from a different generation.
Mm-hmm.
The generation that was like, well, he just needs his backside smacked, basically. Yeah. Hey, what a bad lad he is. Look at what he's done
there.
Hungry.
That's the worst one.
Yeah.
No, he won't eat when he's hungry. There's no chance of that happening.
No, he's not coming back to that. He is actually starving himself, as you can see, because he's skin and bone. That's not really happening. You just want to give him a smack backside because, look at this, it's 10 o'clock at night and he's still running about, because he doesn't sleep. This is why. That being said, of course, my mother was the person that had to take days off work. We were really, really lucky. So at least some nights she could actually have him when he was going through his non-sleeping phase, era. So we could get some sleep. So that was good. But it's important. I think that grandparents are given credit because that's just two families. Mine and your families is just two that couldn't function without grandparents.
Yeah.
And I think our courses are really important for them so that they feel confident and know their value, because I think they don't. I think they think because they don't know anything about autism or whatever, they don't want to appear that they don't want to know about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to know how valued and their worth and how important they are as a kind of, as basically an underpin of the family.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I know my mum felt completely useless because she couldn't eat. I mean, I can't keep up with Riley. And she just felt like she couldn't care for Riley on her own. And when he has a meltdown, I said last week, she just cries. But my dad's the shoulder there that would help me with the physical care of Riley when Shane's not there. But my mum does. When I'm out and about at work during the day, she'll be the one. I'll come in and the dishes are gone. And, you know, I know Kelly's mum does the same thing. And it just helps out in different ways.
Massively helpful. I would say that to any grandparents, and we do obviously in our courses, if you don't feel that you can be hands-on with your grandchild, because of the challenging behaviours that they are presenting, you can be hands-on anyway, and it's just good to help your child, help your child. Anything helps. Every you know, thing that you do helps. It's really, really much appreciated.
So getting back to Jay, Alison, how's he finding college and stuff at the moment?
The good thing is that college is on.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a good thing, because at the beginning of the first lockdown, it wasn't. So like everybody else, it was a few months before he got back. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't good because he absolutely loves going and he missed the people, the structure to some extent, and was just very kind of lonely being stuck at home before his social life took off on Zoom, is what we're talking about. So at the minute, college is on, and that's great. So he has been going. There isn't many people there, but he's absolutely loving it. So that's a great thing. And he does love college and what he does there. So for him, that has been absolutely a godsend that through lockdown three, it's still going on.
Yeah. I think, I've seen it on social media. A lot of people, there's a lot of judgy people out there, as we know, and it's kind of, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Definitely, yes, there is. There's a lot of judgy people out there.
Yeah.
And I think people realize, you've got to realize, you know, you just do you.
Yeah.
Because everybody is doing the best they can to get through there. I know some of Jay's friends at college, they're not in college at the moment because them or their parents think it's best that they don't go because it's quite dangerous at the minute. And I think, you know, if that's the way you feel and that's the way it works for you, then, yeah, that's brilliant. But for us, the mental health implications of Jay not going to college far outweighs the COVID in our opinion. So it works better that he goes there. It's socially distanced. It's safe. He has mask and he's loving it. So for us, that works.
Yeah. I've felt it myself where, you know, you see that your child's going into school and they look at you as if you're a monster. But in general, people don't understand some of the scenarios that are happening at home. For some of these kids, it's absolutely crucial to be getting them into school. So I think people should just be a little bit more mindful of, like you say, like, just do you and let us concentrate on us.
That's right. Whatever works. This is how everybody has got to, instead of judging each other, we've obviously just got to get through this period in time. So yeah. If it works for you, do it. And if it doesn't work for you, don't do it. But mind your business, really.
Yeah, exactly. So what do you think? I mean, I can't wait to get Jay on the podcast.
And yes, he will love this.
He will love it. What's in the future for Jay? What's his plan?
His plan for the future is he is very much loving film and media that he's doing bits and pieces of at college and also events. So he wants to kind of move into that area. So if anyone's looking for a roving reporter or an event planner, we know where to come, or the media. However, he is going to be doing some work experience with a media company called Jack Media. And we both know the John Corbett, hello, who runs Jack Media. And he's going to be doing some work with him on events that's coming up in the summer and doing some interviews and general event media planning. So he's really, really looking forward to that. He wants to continue with that and see where kind of that takes him. However, he absolutely loves films and stuff and film review, and so he would like to throw that into the mix of something he's doing, as well as interviewing people. And I remember one time that I was being interviewed for Radio Newcastle, Jay came with us, me and him were being interviewed on this occasion. And Lisa, who was interviewing me, she said to Jay, what job do you see yourself doing in the future? And he said, yours. So, you know, you kind of see fairer than that. So just watch out, because he's got ambition.
Yeah, well, and why shouldn't he have? I mean, I think we know at the Life of Riley, when we do the play, we try to be as inclusive as possible. There is Scott's autistic, probably autistic. He does a cracking job in the play.
Yeah, one of our actors. Yeah, he's really, really good. Of course, and he's ambitious as well.
Yeah.
And why not? Why not? Things are changing and have to change. And with a bit more understanding and education, I think we can make sure that opportunities do exist for people with disability.
Yeah. And what are your, Jay's a young man now. I have fears for Riley growing up. He's only 9 at the moment, but as he gets older, my fears are increasing. Is he going to be independent? Is he going to work and things like that? Is he going to talk? Like these things, do you still fear for Jay's future?
Of course. And I think that's my job as a mother, as any mother, of course, you fear for your kid's future and what's going to happen. But with a child with disability and obviously autism, that's magnified. So yes, what would I like? Obviously, I want you to be independent and to be able to function on his own. So, you know, we're working towards that. Hopefully that will happen. I want him to have a job that he enjoys and to be self-sufficient. But most of all, and it sounds cliched, but it is true, all I want is for him to be happy.
Yeah.
You know, just doing what he does. At the moment, he's very, very happy, and I want that to continue and for him to pursue his ambitions and reach his potential, you know?
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I think we should we wrap up there?
I think we should, but we'll be back next week.
Yes, and I think we're going to be talking about eating.
Yes. Next week's podcast is going to be on the topic of food and problems surrounding food, which, as I said earlier, that was the first indicator for us that Jay was autistic. And it's a big issue for a lot of people. So we'll be covering that in podcast 3 next week.
Excellent.
Thanks for listening.